Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I have a remarkably good relationship with the president, but one of my passions is I want to win here on ideas. I want to prove that a conservative ideas will make your life better.
We're watching the same pattern repeat itself again in Washington. Partisan politics and dysfunction hurting hardworking families.
They're the ones that are going to be the ones blamed for the shutdown. They know they're going to be blamed for the shutdown. And I would say that you might get a 3 to 7 day shutdown, and then they come to the table.
And the reality is if the government is shut down, then those parks need to be closed in order to fully protect those places.
Businesses at the North Rim have already been struggling, and we cannot afford to bail Washington out.
I don't have any way to, you know, get staff onboarded or provide services to constituents in district. None of that can occur until I'm actually sworn in.
And joining me to talk about the newest entrant into the race for governor, the impact of the federal government shutdown, and more are Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Good morning, Barrett.
Good morning.
And Gael Esposito with Creosote Partners. Gael, good morning to you.
Morning to you as well.
So, Barrett, let me start with you. David Schweikert says he's kind of fed up with Congress and wants to – he thinks that Arizona is still salvageable, in his words. I'm paraphrasing there. So he's getting into the GOP race for governor. We'd never want to – get into other people's heads. But I'm curious, in your mind, what sort of went into the calculation of him leaving a seat that he's won reasonably handily, despite the fact that people have been saying that he's vulnerable for many, many cycles, leaving that seat to run for governor?
Yeah. First, I want to say happy 5786 to everyone who celebrates. It's going to be a good year, I think. But, you know, first of all, you talk about Schweikert winning handily, and, you know, I think 3 points he won, or a couple points last year, and even a slimmer margin 2 years earlier against Jevon Hodge. You know, it's a the Independent Redistricting Commission made it a very, very competitive, I mean, really one of the most competitive districts in the country. And so, you've got sort of that dynamic. And, you know, he's been there 16 years. The Republican Party in Congress has kind of left him. You know, he is an old school fiscal conservative in a time when that doesn't – those people don't have a lot of sway in Congress anymore. So I think he just kind of wants to come home. And what better way to come home than to, you know, run for governor and see what can happen in a three-way primary.
Gael, do you see this in some ways as an indictment of Congress? Like, we talk a lot about when state legislators decide to leave the legislature, how, you know, they can't get anything done and it's not an enjoyable environment. It's just kind of a toxic place down there. Is Schweikert kind of saying that about Congress here?
I think it's an indictment of his polling numbers. I think he saw that he was going to lose this competitive district and wanted an eject button for it, and found that the governor's race would give him a way to do that. You know, David Schweikert has been a creature of Congress, as you said, for a very long time. He's been very comfortable there. I don't think the Republican Party has left him. He's supported everything Donald Trump is doing down the line.
Well, I will say, he fell asleep during the big, beautiful bill. He didn't vote
on it. He said he would have voted for it had he been there to vote.
Oh, I would have voted for it, too, if only the residents had elected me as well. Right. Yes. Great. But, you know what? Those that show up actually get to vote. So,
yeah, that's truly fascinating that he'd really want to have his cake and eat it too in the worst sort of way with that vote and missing it. You know, he's just had the Trump administration's back the whole way. So I can't imagine that he was going to win that competitive district in this environment.
You know, I'm not sure that he would have won. Obviously, it is a very competitive district, and Democrats see that as a huge opportunity. And you know, look, it's a year and a month away from Election Day.
Less than that for the primary, though.
Less than that for the primary. That's an eternity in Donald Trump's era, right? I mean, so we don't know what the economy will look like. We don't know what We don't know if we'll still be here. I mean, we don't know.
You just said it's going to be a good year.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, you know, could be the last year.
Flip-flopping already. Well, so let's get to CD1 in a minute, but I want to ask you, Barrett, about the GOP primary because, of course, Andy Biggs and Karen Taylor Robeson are already running in the GOP primary for governor. Both have gotten Donald Trump's endorsement. It sounds like Schweikert maybe at least is saying he's okay without it. Maybe he's saying that because he doesn't think he's going to get it, even though, as Gail pointed out, he has voted with the administration a pretty high percentage of the time. How do you see his entrance into the race shaking this up, three as opposed to two?
Mm-hmm. Look, in a three-way race, anything can happen. But at the same time, I do believe that Schweikert will pull a little bit from Andy Biggs, a little bit more from Andy Biggs than, say, Karen Taylor Robeson. And I think she has probably an easier path to the nomination now because of this. I don't know that David Schweikert can be competitive, really. But I do think he can play a little bit of a spoiler to Andy Biggs. You know, one of the things about Schweikert is he's never been a huge fundraiser, much like Andy Biggs.
Yeah.
Even though he's in a competitive district, he's never been a massive fundraiser. And I think that is going to really show now he's a lame duck in Congress. And, you know, he's got to spend a lot of time here rather than in D.C. Campaigning. And I'm not sure that he'll do so well in this race. I don't think he will. But again, anything can kind of happen in a year, and anything can happen in a three-way primary.
Gail, how do you see this primary shaking out?
Yeah, I don't even know if he'll make it to the primary. I kind of view this as him auditioning for the lieutenant governor's position for whoever makes it through in the end.
Well, this would be a horrendous way to audition for that. That's
I
think that would be a
by
terrible,
running against the two people. Who might be picking?
I mean, I believe that he'll be an attack dog, certainly against Andy Biggs, and he's already sort of made some negative comments. Not that obviously, you know, Kamala Harris attacked Joe Biden. George H.W. Bush attacked Ronald Reagan. I mean, or, you know, so,
yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, people see the bigger point in election. But I don't know that David Schweikert would bring anything to the table as lieutenant governor. So
Gail,
I don't think it's that.
Gail, do you think that he's getting in this with the expectation that he's not going to make it through the primary?
I think he just needed a way out to save face of not having to go through another grueling congressional campaign that everything was telling him he was going to lose. And I think, you know, taking a long shot bid for governor, maybe striking for that second spot if he's lucky, is the best outcome for him.
What would preclude him, do you think, from making it to the primary?
You know, I think, once again, if he's looking at the polling numbers and they aren't looking that good, he could pull a Matt Salmon and try to step out to boost a candidate that, you know, might give him something in exchange.
Okay, so let's assume, for sake of argument, not saying that you are wrong, but let's say for sake of argument that you are wrong and he is on the ballot. So you have the three of them. How do you think his entrance affects the other two candidates and maybe the contours of the race?
Yeah, I don't know that Barrett's wrong here, that he might pull more from Andy Biggs. But I think the real question is, you know, who is his constituency here in this race, right? You know, he doesn't have Donald Trump's endorsement, yet somehow the people who don't support Donald Trump are all lining up behind Karen Taylor Robeson as well. You know, I just don't know who he thinks is going to have his back.
Yeah, again, remember, he has always been this fiscal conservative. And remember, he actually is a founding member of the Freedom Caucus. And so I think he can trumpet that connection. Much the same way that Andy Biggs can, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you know, Andy Biggs used to be a fiscal conservative.
And was chair of the Freedom Caucus.
And was chair of the Freedom Caucus. And I think they both are occupying a little bit of the same lane. One has a Donald Trump endorsement. One doesn't. But, hey, you know, Donald Trump hands out endorsements. I mean, you know, he'll call up Schweikert one day and I endorse you too. He can't lose.
Is there anything to be said for the timing of this, Barrett, in the sense that both Biggs and Robeson have been campaigning for a while now and Schweikert is just getting in? Does that matter at all?
No, because the campaign started way earlier than normal. And so this is the summertime. Now we're technically, I think, in fall, though it's 100 degrees. you know, the summertime is kind of when you would see candidates start up. We just saw it much earlier in our never-ending campaign cycles. So I think this is – the timing is fine, and it's not like it's, you know, January or February of next year. But no, there's plenty of time for him to go around the state, go to the LD meetings and start fundraising, which is, again, the most important part. And I mean, if he's only going to bring in $300,000-$500,000 a quarter, then I'm not sure what the rationale for him to stay in. I mean, much like, again, Andy Biggs is only bringing in $400,000, and that's a record high for him. And he's going to need a lot more money than that.
Gael, what does this mean, do you think, for Governor Hobbs?
I think Governor Hobbs is in a really good position right now. Speaking of money, she continues to break fundraising records. I think you're going to see her continue to widen the gap between these candidates as they try to out-extreme one another, compete for Donald Trump's affections, just continue to go down a worse and worse path for the Arizona electorate. And so I think Governor Hobbs is in a really prime position for reelection.
And folks, we started talking about David Schweiker. He's leaving the 1st Congressional District, which, Barrett, you reference as being one of the, if not the most competitive district in the state, one of them, and one of the more competitive districts across the country. But Gael, you know, we've been reading sort of about the vulnerability of David Schweikert as a member of Congress for several cycles, and he always manages to win. Barrett pointed out the margins are getting smaller. Does this become more of a competitive district without an incumbent in it?
I think so, yeah. And I'm really intrigued at how this field is going to shape up. Now, you already have a lot of Democrats in the race.
A lot of Democrats.
Yes, yeah. I think you might have more, maybe a candidate who's able to clear that field. And I think you're going to have a lot of Republicans entering that race. There's been a ton of people who have been waiting in the wings for a long time for this opportunity.
Barrett,
yeah,
long list on the GOP side?
You know, I don't think it'll be that long just because I'm not sure that it's going to be a great Republican year. This is actually, you know, sometimes we hear this a lot from Democrats. This is our year. Well, this actually may be their year for that district. But, you know, the Democratic candidates don't inspire a lot of fear on the Republican side, whether it's Woods or Amish Shah, who lost last year to David Schweikert. I'm not really sure people are really fearful of this lineup of Democrats. So obviously the primary is going to be a big decider. And, you know, I think you'll see State Representative Matt Gress get in, State Representative Joseph Chaplick. I've heard a lot of people already taking a pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen a fair number of people already saying thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, first of all, who does want to, you know, if you're successful and wealthy and living a good life, who does want to go back to Congress and twiddle your thumbs and get nothing done?
Do you think, though, Barrett, that without an incumbent, and maybe without this specific incumbent in CD1, does this become a more competitive district?
Well, it was going to be competitive no matter what. But actually, I think without this incumbent and some of the baggage that David Schweikert had, his ethics issues and things like that, it actually becomes a little bit more friendly to the Republican, depending on the Republican.
Hmm.
If it is a, you know, far-right MAGA Republican, that district is not far. It's a Republican district in general, but it is definitely not a MAGA district. And so I think the nominee from the Republican Party will absolutely matter.
What Republican isn't MAGA anymore?
Well, I would say that, you know, Matt Gress is a pretty strong conservative, but I don't know that he's MAGA, if you will. But he's a very, you know, fiscally conservative, but, you know, has a lot of interests. And I do believe that he would represent that district pretty well. He's conservative, but I don't think he's far right.
Gael, do you expect more Democrats to get in?
I do, yeah. I think the opportunity might attract some stronger candidates who had been taking a pass because they didn't want to take on an incumbent. We'll see who those are. I know there is moves to recruit even Mayor Kate Gallego to that race and others, so we'll see what happens.
I know you don't have to live in the district, but she doesn't live in the district, does she? Or I don't know where she lives.
I don't know where she lives.
I don't know. I know you don't have to live in the district. But,
right.
But I do think there's probably some dissatisfaction among Democrats of this somewhat weak field.
All right. So speaking of Congress, Congress has not been able to come to an agreement on funding the government. So we are now in, what, day 3 of the federal government shutdown. there are a lot of ways to look at how this might impact Arizona. Obviously, like the most visceral one might be looking at national parks. The Trump administration has said they're going to keep the Grand Canyon open, even though some supporters of the park say that's not such a great idea with short staff and things like that. Gael, how do you see – and I don't want to talk about who's winning and losing the shutdown because this is bigger than sort of politics. But I'm curious how you see it impacting the state and the people who live here.
Yeah, I mean, nobody wins in a government shutdown. And I think, you know, we're continuing to see the dysfunction of the Trump administration. They've already slashed federal agencies before. They're looking to take this opportunity again. And they keep doing it in an extremely partisan way. They're now even being explicit that they want to cut, quote unquote, Democratic agencies, whatever agency they think is left-leaning enough, like the Department of Education, eliminating that. They want to continue down that road and continue to target folks in an extreme and political manner. And I think, you know, for Arizona, you know, in the past, we've seen the state try to bridge the gap. We don't have the dollars to do that anymore, and we can't keep bailing out the Trump administration's failures. So I think, you know, the longer this drags on, the more it's going to hurt people and it's going to hurt the state.
Wasn't it Rahm Emanuel who once said, don't ever let a crisis go to waste?
A good crisis go to waste. Yeah. I don't know if he's the one who said it, but that is definitely something that someone has said.
Yeah. And so, you know, the Trump administration is probably looking at this going, all right, look, getting rid of the Department of Education has been Republican orthodoxy just about since the Department of Education was created. So and before the shutdown, they were talking about getting rid of it. So that's mm-hmm. They are now going to use this crisis to further their policy goals, which, quite frankly, they have stated time and time again. Not a surprise. Donald Trump talked about this stuff on the campaign trail. It is what the American people voted for. You can't be surprised. You know, winners and losers. Really, there's one big loser, and that's the people who work for the federal government who are not going to get a pay. Some who have to work, some who aren't working, and some who will be fired. Those are the people who will be the biggest loser, and the people who will be hurt the most over the next, I don't know, week, 20 days,
however
month,
long,
however
goes,
long
right?
it goes. So, I do hope that. There is a solution that is coming quickly. You know, this is a shutdown just truly of the making of these people in Congress, both Republicans and Democrats.
Well, Gael, to the point that Barrett made about federal government employees, Arizona is certainly not a place like Virginia where a huge percentage of people work for the federal government. But there are certainly people who work for federal agencies in Arizona, and presumably either they're being furloughed and not working and not getting paid, or they are working and not getting paid, or as Barrett said, they're just going to get fired.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't started to see the layoffs just yet. But, you know, the longer it drags on, the easier it is for them to try and pursue that. You know, they've continued to do this without congressional authorization, without going through the proper channels. So why wouldn't they continue to act like a king? You know, that's not Barrett said that's what the American people voted for. I don't think they voted for that unilateral executive authority. You know, there's supposed to be a process. They also voted for Congress. And I think that's what you see Democrats fighting for, is making sure that, you know, whatever budget gets agreed to, whatever funding gets out there, is spent how they authorize it to be spent and not just at the whims of the Trump administration.
Well, and Barrett, to the point you were just making, we had Senator Gallego on just before the shutdown, and he basically said, look, the Trump administration is firing people willy-nilly and not spending money Congress has appropriated already. So what difference does it make in a shutdown?
I mean, I kind of agree with that. You know, I understand why Democrats are not eager to keep the government open, because Donald Trump is going to start has been through DOGE and whatever, and will continue to reduce the federal workforce, the federal footprint, and reduce all agencies, whether they're Democratic agencies or Republican agencies. I'm not sure which is which. But so I kind of get that. But at the same time, right now, this shutdown is hurting people who currently do have jobs, and, you know, counting on a paycheck, who are often living paycheck to paycheck. So I think it is important to open up the government, and whether it's on a short-term basis or a longer-term basis, to at least get those people back to work and paid.
All right, guys, just about a minute left. We're going to be talking about the WNBA Finals in a few minutes here. Game one tonight. Kyle, I know you're a big Mercury fan.
I am.
You have faith?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I think, you know, they could even sweep the series, but I'm going to guess Mercury in five in the end.
That is a hot take, right? That might be hotter than the take of Schweikert not making it to the primary.
On May 30th, I predicted they'd make it to the championship, so I'm feeling bullish here.
All right. Barrett, what do you think?
I think the Aces are going to pull us out. And quite frankly, I'm just impressed that I even know it's the Aces.
Fair enough. All right. Barrett Marson, Gael Esposito, thanks you both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.